Right. Welcome to Wednesday's edition of Big Blue Kickoff Live here on Giants.com. He is Paul Dottino. I'm Lance Beddoe. Good to be with you. With you for the next 60 minutes, 201-939-4513. That is the telephone number. Can't get to the phone. You can interact with the two of us on Twitter, hashtag Giants Chat. We'll get to your phone calls. We'll get to your tweets in a little bit. Today we're going to focus on 2018 NFL free agency. SI.com just put on their site a list of some of the top free agents at every single position. Now, last week, John and I went through a list that was put together through ESPN.com, SI taking it from a different perspective. So Paul and I are going to run through some of the top free agents, perhaps some targets that the Giants may want to look into as they look to improve the roster in 2018. And as I mentioned, we'll get your feedback on the lines as well as through Twitter. So as we look at this laundry list here, Paul, they went position by position. And
yes,
clearly when you start with the quarterback spot, I don't think it's any surprise that Kirk Cousins is atop the list. He clearly is the best quarterback, in my opinion, that is going to have an opportunity to change teams. And we figure that will happen given the fact that the Redskins pulled off a trade, which won't become official until the start of the new league year on March 14th. But they have acquired Alex Smith from the Chiefs. So that in all likelihood means Kirk Cousins is going to have to find a new destination.
You know, I think it's pretty much assumed that there are at least a half a dozen teams or at least somewhere in that vicinity of clubs that desperately would like to get their hands on a starting caliber quarterback. Now, whether or not they want to go through free agency or through the draft, that's going to have a very, very large say in how much the Giants can get if they are going to trade that number two pick to a quarterback-hungry team. So, to me, it is important that the list of free agent quarterbacks is not very long, at least for quality guys, because it will enhance the opportunity to then up your price if you're going to make a deal. So you talk about Kirk Cousins being number one on the list, at least potentially, and I agree. There's no question he is head and shoulders above everybody else. But then when you look at the others, they're only listing two difference makers at quarterback on their SI free agent list.
Yeah.
That would be Cousins and Case Keenum, simply because he had a terrific couple of months with the Minnesota Vikings. Now, whether or not you believe that was a mirage, who knows? But at the moment, SI is saying those are the only two difference makers as free agent quarterbacks on the list. Now, they do list all the other quarterbacks who they consider other significant free agents, not necessarily impact guys, but Josh McCown of the Jets, who had a nice season. Certainly a capable player to run an offense, but, you know, if you consider yourself going to the playoffs, is that the kind of guy you want running
the
show?
Well, it's not somebody that you're going to bank on being your quarterback for the long term. It could be
somebody
you bring in as a stopgap for a year or two. But if you're looking for stability at that position, Kirk Cousins is a guy you go after. And I would even say if the Vikings don't re-sign Sam Bradford, that'd be somebody I'd consider who I don't think is a stopgap. I think if he could stay healthy, Sam Bradford is also somebody that you can at least rely upon.
The injury history would prevent me from thinking.
Well, you have to take that into consideration.
That I could rely upon him.
Yeah.
You know, other names just real quickly. McCown is Tom Savage, Sam Bradford, Jay Cutler.
Well, Cutler's going to retire again, so I don't even know why he's on that list.
Osweiler, yeah. Geno Smith, Teddy Bridgewater, Barkley, Gabbert, Moore, Fitzpatrick. These are the guys like in the next level of veteran free agent quarterbacks on the SI.com list. And quite honestly, as I said a couple of moments ago, it's not a very impressive list. So if you are one of those quarterback-hungry teams and you think that this crop is so great that you got to get your hands on one, well, then it's time for some teams up top to start talking turkey.
Well, I do think, as I mentioned, Cousins, Keenum, and Bradford, to me, are the three, Paul,
that I can't put Bradford there. I just can't do
it. I think teams are going to look at him. If the Vikings don't bring him back, I think some teams are going to definitely look at him. And he will be a starter next season, in all likelihood, for a team that is at least right now having issues at the quarterback position, which means they may still draft somebody, But they also may feel content that Bradford could be the starter day one, and maybe they don't have to go after a guy in the first round, and they could wait to draft a quarterback in the second or the third round. I could see a situation like that playing out.
See, for me, the problem with doing that is you almost have to get an emergency quarterback ready that you're comfortable with if you're going to rely on Bradford as your starter, because the odds are pretty good he's not going to play the full season.
Well, durability has been his issue throughout his course of his career, but it could also be a team that has a quarterback, wants to upgrade, and whoever started moves back to the backup role, especially if they're still under contract, and then becomes a starter.
Case in point, like the Dolphins.
Well, the Dolphins is one thing, but with Ryan Tannehill coming back to full health, I don't think they're going to bench him in favor of Sam Bradford. I was thinking more if the Broncos...
You could argue Bradford's an upgrade when he's healthy, though.
But... I mean, yeah, gray area with me with respect to that.
Tannehill, I'm not a big Tannehill fan. He lost me.
I'm not an overwhelming fan, but Tannehill to me is still serviceable when healthy, that he could be a good quarterback. And remember, he's also a product of what happened with the Dolphins' offensive line.
Yes.
And the Dolphins' offensive line, to me, last season took somewhat of a step back after they had made some strides the previous year. So you need to see how that plays out. But the example that I was going to go to, Paul, for a Sam Bradford fit is if Denver doesn't win the Kirk Cousins sweepstakes, because I think Minnesota is a wild card team, which I talked to you about off the air.
I agree.
Denver, since it has a number of quarterbacks who are young, the Paxton Lynches of the world, the Osweilers, maybe they bring in a Sam Bradford and then still groom one of these young guys in the event Bradford gets hurt. They could still bring up Paxton Lynch or Osweiler. One of
those
circumstances.
I could see the logic there. You think Osweiler's going back to Denver?
Well, I could see them maybe re-signing him as a backup quarterback. Yeah. That's how I could see that playing out. And Bradford would be a starter under those circumstances, because you said, and I'm reacting to your point, Paul, you would not feel comfortable if you were running a team banking on Sam Bradford playing 16 games. And I agree with you. So you would have to be a team where you have a Paxton Lynch, you have a Brock Osweiler as your security blanket in the event that Bradford goes down.
Now, there is another list at the bottom of the quarterback section on the SI.com free agent list, and they're talking about potential cap casualties at the position. Now, this would be very interesting. Jaguars' Blake Bortles is listed on this part of the deal.
Because of the injury clause in his
contract.
And
I tell you what, you know, Blake Bortles obviously accomplished some things this year, and he would be an interesting name for somebody to pursue if they were looking to upgrade. That could cloud the market for sure. I think Andy Dalton of the Bengals, who is on this list.
That would certainly cloud the market.
That guy can play. Again, he hasn't won any playoff games. I understand
that. Well, but remember, that's a product of a team.
It is.
That's not just a product of a quarterback.
But there will some people who say, you know what, maybe he's really not in the top half of the league. I don't know. I could see where that's beauty's in the eye of the beholder with Andy Dalton. There are going to be people who think, you know what, he is an upper half guy. There are other people who are going to say, you know what, I really don't think so. He hasn't done enough with Cincinnati. Beauty's in the eye of the beholder for Andy Dalton, but that's a guy who would attract some attention, I believe, if he were set free.
I would be stunned if he did not attract attention.
And then
somebody like that hit the market.
The Bills' Tyrod Taylor is also on this list, and, you know, you have to believe with what he was able to accomplish, with the efficiency that he was able to execute on the field for Buffalo when he was on the field, I think there would be some teams that would want to talk to him.
And depending on what Buffalo wants to do with Nathan Peterman, who got a few starts here or there last year, or maybe they want to draft a quarterback. Remember, we talked about Buffalo's got the 21 and the 22 pick in the first round.
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't mean they can't go after a quarterback in the late first round. One other note that I wanted to add to your point about Andy Dalton, A.J. McCarron, they're still waiting to get the decision on will he be an unrestricted free agent or a restricted free agent. That, to me, changes the outlook for Andy Dalton in a blink of an eye, because if A.J. McCarron is an unrestricted free agent, the Bengals are not parting ways with Andy Dalton so quickly. If he's a restricted free agent, it changes your chances of retaining him, because, and that's another important thing to bring up here. If A.J. McCarron becomes an unrestricted free agent, Paul, that dramatically changes the market, too. That means you're going to have Kirk Cousins and A.J. McCarron that, to me, are number one and two on the list, that teams who are quarterback hungry and quarterback needy.
Oh, I'd rather have Keenum over McCarron just based on the performance in the league. McCarron doesn't have enough of a resume
You're right about that.
Keenum did more in a couple of months than AJ's done.
I don't disagree with you, but I think the fact that AJ McCarron started a playoff game with the Bengals is going to boost his resume in the eyes of a lot of teams that need a quarterback, and also the fact that came from a very good college program. I know they didn't necessarily air it out in Alabama, but you take all that into consideration, and the fact that there's been a lot of hype surrounding him, McCarron will get a great deal of interest, and that would impact Sam Bradford and Case Keenum's suitors immediately. So there's a lot of unknown. I guess that's why we're bringing this up. A lot of unknown that could be settled over the next 24 to 48 hours that then impacts the draft with respect to the Giants at number two.
Not just the Giants, but anybody.
But specifically the Giants who
looking
may
to make a trade up
exploring
there.
Their options.
And yeah. Quite frankly, when you talk about the guys we just listed, think about this. The Dolphins are 11. The Bengals are 12. If either one of those teams have decided that they want to go with some hotshot young prospect and they're not happy with Andy Dalton and they're not happy with Tannehill, well, you're talking about spots 11 and 12 now that become tradable spots with teams that may want to move down, like the Giants, out of the top five.
Yeah, so those are things that everybody obviously has to take into consideration. Real quickly, want to run through a few other notable positions before we open up the phone lines at 201-939-4513. For the running backs, Le'Veon Bell obviously tops the list, but it's hard to believe that the Steelers are just going to let him walk.
Yeah, sure.
They gave him the franchise tag. I know he wasn't happy about it, but I would be very surprised if he changes jerseys. Carlos Hyde is their second-ranked running back, and that's understandable. In terms of their significant free agents who are on the second tier, Deion Lewis is somebody that comes to mind, and I think it's realistic he may change teams given the fact that, Paul, there's a lot of turnover at the running back position for the Patriots year to year.
Yeah, I don't think there's any doubt, and in fact, it's funny, when you look at this particular list they've put out, they also include the ages of these guys, which of course is very critical when you talk about running backs. Everyone says that 30 is the death blow, and look what's so common about most of these guys. They're in that 25 to 27 range, outside of LeGarrette Blount, who's 31, and Frank Gore, who was the ageless wonder at 34.
It's amazing how he still continues to perform. Yeah.
I mean, yeah, I have no idea how he's doing it, but he continues to do it. But you're talking about guys who are in that 25 to 27 range, which says they should still have some tread on their tires, but you know what? They're not these young, healthy, energetic studs, you know, who are 22, 23, 24, you know, because they've gone through their first contracts with the initial teams that drafted them, and now they're looking for that second contract, or maybe even third contract, depends on what their situation was. Injuries may have forced them to get cut early, and they're still looking now for extended years at the back end before they turn 30.
I do think, though, there are some intriguing names on that list within that group that you're talking about, especially players to me, Paul, that are looking for more of an opportunity. Jerick McKinnon is somebody that comes to mind with the Vikings, more of a complimentary back.
Well,
to
Jeremy
Latavius
Hill's
Murray.
An interesting name.
And that was going to be the next name. I think Hill is a very interesting guy because of the Bengals and them drafting a number of running backs and turning that position over. Hill got sort of phased out.
Yeah.
And now he may be looking to revitalize his career. So I could see perhaps somebody giving him an opportunity that thinks he still has enough gas in the tank. Because, I mean, look at that. Jeremy Hill's only 25 years old, Paul. You know, it's not as if he's a worn-down running back. I can certainly see him getting a great deal of interest.
And potential cap casualties, the one guy who I see on that list who might be somewhat intriguing is Latavius Murray. Because if Dalvin Cook is expected to come back with the Vikings, they're probably saying, well, you know, do we really need to have Murray around at the money that we're paying him?
They didn't give him a great deal of money, though, when he signed as a free agent.
But, enough.
But here's the thing. If you're the Vikings, Paul, and you have Dalvin Cook coming off the torn ACL, you had McKinnon and Murray have both productive seasons. Both of them are free agents. I would think – well, Murray's not a free agent, excuse me. He'd be a cap casualty.
No, right.
I guess my point is you want to retain one of the two.
Yes.
As an insurance policy to Dalvin Cook. So I don't see them letting both walk.
I don't think so either.
Meaning one you cut and then one signs elsewhere.
I agree.
At the wide receiver position, Jarvis Landry tops the list. But once again, very surprising if he parts ways.
Agreed.
With the Miami Dolphins. So then you start to look at some of the other names. They've got Sammy Watkins and Allen Robinson right behind Jarvis Landry. Robinson completely missed this last season because of a torn ACL. Watkins was traded to the Rams and didn't necessarily have monster numbers, but did open up a lot of opportunities for the likes of Robert Woods and some of their other receivers. So I don't know how teams are going to view Sammy Watkins, whether or not if they brought him in as the number one, can he put up consistent numbers and can he stay healthy? So then you get to the other significant free agents at the wide receiver position, and this is something that could maybe interest the Giants because they may be looking for a number three or a number four wideout, Paul. And when you look at some of these names, there are guys coming off productive seasons. Paul Richardson of the Seattle Seahawks, I thought he made a name for himself this past season. Danny Amendola, he is, though, opposite the age of 30 that you normally look for at that position. And then Jordan Matthews is probably a name that is interesting. 25 years old. Remember, he was traded from the Eagles to the Bills. Durability, health is something that comes to mind when you think of Jordan Matthews. But at 25, there's still a great deal of upside surrounding a player like that.
I'll give you two other names here that are somewhat intriguing. Terrell Pryor, who was a bust with the Redskins.
He got hurt, too. Yeah.
You know, what's the real Terrell Pryor? I mean, I don't think the Redskins are real happy with what they got out of him.
And
I can't see them bringing him back. Now, if you are of the belief that it's the previous Terrell Pryor that you're going to get, you probably would certainly take a dive into that end of the pool. And I think the other guy who's kind of interesting for me here, he's been an underachiever. But when he came out of school, I thought Dante Moncrief was a legitimate NFL threat. And, you know, he's had only kind of one real good season out of four.
Yeah.
But at 24 years old, believe it or not, only 24 years old, that might be an intriguing guy that somebody might want to work with.
And sometimes all it takes is a change of scenery, a new scheme, and then you get more out of the player. Because there's been a lot of Colts wide receivers, I thought, that have been somewhat of a disappointment. Mm-hmm. Part of that is the injury to Andrew Luck and the lack of big playmaking ability for the Colts. That has also contributed to that position as well. Good. Skip over tight ends just because real quickly I want to get to defense and then we want to open up the phone lines. But you know what? Before we get to defense, offensive linemen. And we've been seeing these rankings pretty much equivalent, Paul, to just about every outlet. SI.com is no different. Nate Solder and Justin Pugh are their top two tackles because they're considering Pugh getting perhaps some interest at the tackle position since you can move him around. And those are their top two at that spot. And I've seen a number of other outlets rank those two the same exact way.
Yeah, I think they were all looking at the list that I compiled in December. I started talking about this list way back when on BBK before the season was even over. And is it any surprise that the next grouping starts with Chris Hubbard of the Steelers, who I fully expect to re-sign with Pittsburgh? I don't think there's any way they let him get away. And then the next two guys, the Patriots guys that I've been talking about now for weeks, Cameron Fleming and LeAdrian Waddle, does not at all surprise me that those would be the next guys listed. After that, again, it just drops off significantly. You know, I will tell you this, Lance. Yes, the Giants need to mix in draft picks with free agents to upgrade their offensive line. Again, the price is going to determine how much you're going to chase any one of these guys. For that matter, even if Justin Pugh winds up coming back, it's going to be a numbers game as to whether or not that's realistically possible.
Yeah. Well, and the next player I was just going to name is another numbers game because everybody, I'm sure, is foaming at the mouth, is Andrew Norwell, the top guard, who comes over from Carolina, all-pro season. Dave Gettleman's certainly very familiar with him, but we're talking about a number of teams that know how well he played, and now he wants to cash in as well. So that's another player.
When you look at the law of supply and demand, and you look at the opportunity that certain free agents have when they come out in a year where there's a big-time drop-off in the free agent class, they just keep hearing that cash register go ding, 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 ding. It's just ringing off the hook. And he's in that spot because look at the guards.
After him.
He's the only one in the difference maker category. After that,
they don't have anybody under him, correct?
After that,
they then go to their next category.
Next category, of which DJ Fluker is in.
Yeah.
And should be.
No, and there are some quality guys there.
Quality players,
like,
but
let's not misinterpret
nobody.
That. Yeah.
Yeah, but nobody of the level.
Well, and the upside and the age, too.
Right.
There's three things with Norwell. There's upside, he's 26, and also he's coming off a career year. The other players, in addition to Fluker, for example, Sean Laval, who's played for the Redskins, banged up this past season.
30 years old already.
30 years old. Serviceable guy, but certainly you wonder, can he hold up? And then Jonathan Cooper, 28, who actually filled in nicely for the Cowboys, given the fact that they were dealing with some injuries. But, you know, he was a high draft pick with the Cardinals. They moved on from him. Dallas gave him a second chance. Does a team now think
same
that...
Same story as Fluker.
Yeah, exactly. A prove-it type of year, wanting to reinvent himself and hopefully gaining some interest. Weston Richburg is listed as the top center. That's not necessarily a surprise. One other name, though, at the center position that I think is to watch is Spencer Long, who was out for the season. And then Chase Roullier, their rookie center, filled in Washington. But Long's only 27 years old and actually, you know, did a nice job when healthy. So he's another name that I think is to watch. All right. In terms of defense, there are a number of pass rushers that are going to hit the market. And the two most notable ones are DeMarcus Lawrence of the Cowboys coming off a career year. No surprise. That's what happens when you're due for a contract. And then Ziggy Ansah of the Detroit Lions. You've got Lawrence is 25. He's been suspended previously. And Ziggy's 28. So they're both young, they're both consistent, and they're both very good at getting at the quarterback.
No argument at all, and you know those guys are going to be looking at some big numbers.
Absolutely. I don't think anybody would debate with respect to that. In terms of some of the interior offensive linemen, Sheldon Richardson, who was traded from the Jets to the Seahawks, 27 years old, he's going to have an opportunity. And through the rumorville, by the way, Paul, it appears as if the Jets may be parting ways with Ahmed Wilkerson. So you're going to have maybe two former Jets defensive linemen, excuse me, that are going to be hitting the free agent market. And then you have Dontari Poe, who signed a one-year deal with the Falcons.
Yes.
And he is now going to hit the market once again. Poe was originally with the Kansas City Chiefs and did not get as much money as he had hoped. That's why he settled on a one-year deal.
I don't necessarily think the Falcons were overwhelmed with the season he had either, to be honest with you.
I think that's fair. It goes back to? Those interior defensive linemen, what are you hoping to get out of them, Paul? Do you want sacks or do you want them to be tackling machines? For example, on yesterday's show, we were talking about the rookie grades, right? And we were focusing on Dalvin Tomlinson's season. And when you looked up the chart, Tomlinson led all rookie defensive linemen in terms of tackles.
But rookie defensive tackles,
but he didn't have the sack numbers to perhaps make him extremely appealing because he only had one sack. So what do you want out of a free agent? I think that's the big question for these teams.
Well, your scheme is a big deal with that, too,
especially when
you're talking about linemen.
Oh, because sometimes the interior guys are drawing the attention to open things up for the external defensive linemen. No doubt about that. And as far as the linebackers are concerned, and we've been receiving a lot of question marks from fans on the phones, on Twitter, you know, here's where SI ranks some of the linebackers. So I think it's important we spend at least a minute or two on this. Nigel Bradham is their difference maker with the Philadelphia Eagles, 28 years old. And then their other significant free agents, they've got Tahir Whitehead of the Lions, who is a guy that's battled some injuries here or there. He's 27. Avery Williamson of Tennessee, also a young up-and-coming linebacker at 26 years old. And then Navarro Bowman, who was let go by the Niners, played the remainder of the season with the Oakland Raiders. He's a little bit older at 29 years old.
Bowman also has an injury history, too.
Yeah.
So despite the fact that he's on the better side of 30, he has been banged up.
And then they have a number of other young guys on this list. For example, Todd Davis of the Broncos. He's a very good run stopper. So he's somebody that perhaps is going to gain some interest now that he's looking for a second contract. And Anthony Hitchens, Dallas Cowboys linebacker, 25 years old, somebody that also has had to deal with some injuries in the early stage of his career. But those are two guys that are young, that maybe fit the bill of you bring him into a new system. They're still at the point where they haven't hit their prime. And I think those are some of the guys that obviously you want to look at and you want to take into consideration. Devon Kennard is on this list, too, at 26 years old.
Sure.
And then as far as the secondary, Malcolm Butler, Vontae Davis, who parted ways with the Indianapolis Colts. He was actually just medically cleared, according to his agent, because he had surgery that he elected to have in the offseason. So I'm sure teams are going to want to make sure that he checks out from a health perspective. Patrick Robinson is a free agent. He's with the Philadelphia Eagles. Morris Claiborne, who spent one season with the Jets after starting his career with the Dallas Cowboys. Prince Amukamara is going to be a free agent again after a short stint with the Chicago Bears. And a name that we brought up also is Bashaud Breeland, 26 years old. He's the Redskins corner opposite Josh Norman. You know, I think that's going to be a name that's going to get some interest. A little bit up and down during the course of his career, but somebody that I think could be intriguing to mention.
The scary part, of course, for me is that Ross Cockrell is on this list, and I think the Giants really should re-sign him. I like him a lot. I'd be surprised if they don't, but if he's out there, people are going to go after him. He can play.
Absolutely. And then the main safeties that they have as difference makers, Eric Reed of the 49ers, LaMarcus Joyner of the Rams, who is somebody that has played safety and corner, so his versatility is appealing, and he's 27 years old. And then Kenny Vaccaro, 27 years old, who is going to be a free agent after injuries, being benched with the Saints, up and down, but a guy that still very much, to me, has a great deal of value if he could stay healthy.
I think he's a box safety in my mind.
Yeah.
And, you know, it would be very interesting for a team that wants to use a lot of three safety looks because, again, your safeties become pseudo linebackers in that kind of scheme. And we've talked about how Betcher likes to do a lot of morphing with his back seven. You know, that certainly would be a guy that you might want to think about.
Well, and to your point, Paul, one of the things we talked about, when they're evaluating free agents, if Betcher feels as if there's opportunities to put three safeties on the field, much more so than maybe playing an additional linebacker, that may influence Dave Gettleman's train of thought in terms of how he targets free agents. They may go for those hybrid type of safeties who they feel can be brought down and play sort of a linebacker role as opposed to just get a straight linebacker who doesn't have nearly as much versatility.
It's not a great draft for safeties. So if they think they need to add somebody, and again, I think that Andrew Adams certainly can play that style of football if they want him to, and we still know that Nat Burhe might still come back too, and who knows about that situation. He's had a lot of injuries in his career. The Giants must take that into account if they feel like the position needs more bodies.
I think Nat Burhe is a feasible proposition to bring back. I mean, given the fact that, let's face it, he has struggled to stay healthy, you wonder what type of a market is going to present itself for somebody like that. All right, let's open up the phone lines. 201-939-4513, hashtag Giants Chat. Matt is in Rhode Island. He gets us going. What do you got for us, Matt?
Good afternoon, gentlemen. How are you?
Hi.
All right, Matt. What's happening?
Question, and this is for Paul, just because Lance, I'm a little closer in age to you, so I got to go in the history books. I got one quick question, and I'll ask a second.
Okay, Sonny, have at it.
No offense, no offense, Paul, but it's just, you have a history book of knowledge up there in your noggin.
Thank you. Go ahead.
Have you ever, or can you remember a year where the Giants or any team, for that matter, went into an offseason this bereft of talent on the offensive line or any unit for that matter?
Well, to be honest with you, I think a lot of teams these days over the course of the salary cap era have gone into the offseason saying, oh, my goodness, we need to fix at least two or three spots on that offensive line. It seems like it's an annual occurrence. And this is what happens when you have the CBA rules as they are, the free agency rules as they are, and you know what? It's not going to go away. This is the way the league is now built.
Paul, the Giants need five spots, arguably.
Oh, I disagree with that.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's going a little too far, Matt.
Brett Jones is a starter. Flowers is going to be one of the starting five. I think there's a really good chance that Fluker comes back. I don't know about Pugh because of the injuries and what kind of numbers he's going to want, but I think it's safe to say they'll have at least two starters back, realistically maybe three, which means there could be two holes.
Yeah, not to mention, I'll reverse the question that you posed, Matt. I mean, when is the last time you've seen a team completely revamp an offensive line and bring in five new starters?
Five in one
from
year?
One season to another.
I mean, I can't even answer that.
That to me is completely unrealistic.
Yeah, I'm not expecting them to bring in five. I figured Jones would, you know, just because of a salary purpose, it would make a lot of sense.
It's a solid player,
to bring
too.
Back at center.
Yeah.
He actually, there was no noticeable drop-off for sure when Richburg went out. And Flowers, you know, they'll almost out of necessity probably give him a spot to start.
He'll be somewhere on the line, I guarantee you that.
Yeah, at least in a camp battle. But even to your point about Fluka, that's somebody they still have to bring back. So just looking at the guys on the team, there's not a lot there. Now, Paul, you've been beating the trade-down drum for months now. So I want to hear if you're the GM of this football team,
right?
I don't need names and necessarily players, but how are you allocating your resources this offseason? Are you going for tackles and free agency? Are you doing it in the draft? If Paul DeTino, they said, you know what, we don't even want Gettleman anymore. We're going to let DeTino do the job. What is Paul DeTino doing these next few months?
That would be known as fantasy football, wouldn't it?
Well, we can all dream, right?
Fantasy
all
right. Squared, I'd say.
You know what? You know what I would probably do if I had my way? And, again, what I don't know about the medical on a bunch of these guys, and I also don't know what the prices are going to be on these guys. But if I could assume, if you will, guys are healthy and guys are going to come in at reasonable numbers, I would probably sign Cameron Fleming from the Patriots, okay, to play one of my tackle spots. If I was able to trade down from the number 2 pick, okay, I would definitely try to get down into the top 12, where I would take either an Orlando Brown Jr. or I would take McGlinchey. I would take Will Hernandez in the second round. Okay, the stud offensive lineman who had terrific workouts in the All-Star games, and so right then and there, I would have two bona fide starting guys who would be able to be infused into the offensive line, and I should say I'm re-signing Fluker. Also, that gives me my 5 starters. I mean, that's how I would rebuild this offensive line if I could.
And I think ultimately what it'll boil down to is you hope this year they can get the line back to a functionality spot. And then, you know, in the second offseason, they could really then maybe possibly turn it into a strain. There's just simply not going to be enough assets to go around to do everything in one offseason. And, you know, obviously there's some other things they need to take care of.
Well, so it depends on the progression. I mean, if you draft offensive linemen, it all depends on how quickly they transfer their skill set to the NFL. I mean, sometimes you get lucky and maybe even a mid-round pick, you know, becomes a starter. The Vikings, for example, we use them as
well. Elfine was a number 3, and
he became their starting center. So, sometimes that does happen.
The key is you need 6 potential starters on your offensive line, because you can never assume that all 5 starters are going to go through the season healthy. So you need to know that you have at least one other guy, that number 6 guy on your offensive line depth chart. There are usually going to be 9 offensive linemen on your team. You need to know that number 6 guy, and you hope he's not necessarily the center, because the centers usually don't have as much flexibility. You'd like it to be a guard or a tackle, preferably even the 3rd tackle, to be a starting caliber guy, so that you know if somebody goes down, you'll be able to restructure it somehow to where you're still going to be able to put 5 starting caliber guys on the field.
Well, that's what DJ Fluker was this past season. He was a guy that they came in off the bench, and he was able to start. I mean, the Eagles did the same thing. I remember the Eagles brought in Stefan Wisniewski, who actually then became a legitimate starter and helped them win a Super Bowl. And he had the versatility where you can move him around. He was center. He was a guard. He could play both sides, right and left. You need some type of jack-of-all-trades offensive lineman.
And I'll give you one other way you could go here. See, my thinking is the Giants need to acquire, even if they've only got 2 holes on the starting offensive line, if Fluker comes back. Again, I still think you need a total of 6, right? So I think the Giants need to acquire a combination of 3 starting caliber offensive linemen, whether it's 2 in free agency or 1 in the draft or vice versa. That's what I think they need to do. And if you want to tell me they'll sign a Fleming, they'll sign a Norwell, they'll go and draft 1 guy in the first 2 rounds of the draft, that's fine. Just get me 3 starting caliber offensive linemen. That's how I see it.
All I want to know is I hope next year we can finally see some power football again. Thanks for taking my call.
Right, I'm with you.
Appreciate the phone call. And I think that's feasible. The combination of the draft and free agency is the way that you tackle the offensive line. You can't do it 1 of the 2. You can't solely rely on 1 of the 2, I guess.
Do you want 3 like I do?
I think 3 is something that is certainly feasible. I think it's doable.
You're not going to get more than three caliber guys in one take of the offseason. Probably
not. You remember, the other thing that you got to keep in mind is, and I'm not trying to get off topic here, you know, Odell Beckham, Landon Collins, when you look ahead to next offseason and you think about who you're putting on the books and how much more flexibility you need, you at least need to take that into consideration. Even if you give some of these guys the franchise tag, you at least need to start thinking about these other players that you're going to have to take care of. So that's another reason why the draft has to be used as a tool, Paul, to address the offensive line. It can't just be a spending spree and you go out and you grab a bunch of starting offensive linemen and you're paying all the guys and locking up all the salary cap space.
See, that's one of the reasons why I'm not big on necessarily going after the Panthers guard. Because Norwell is going to ring the cash register big time. Soldier's going to ring the cash register big time.
They're going to set the market.
I think it's going to be a lot harder to do everything else you want to do if you sign one of those guys. Now, not impossible, but then it says to me, you're going to have to draft two offensive linemen in your first three picks at the end of April. You put yourself in that spot where you have to do it. That's how I see it.
Well, I mean, if you land one of the elite linemen on the free agent market, and I guess who I'm referring to is Norwell, bringing back Justin Pugh, or Solder, you're going to have to lay out mega bucks for one of those three players, which means it's going to limit your resources to go out and address other areas. So therefore, the draft has to be utilized to do the rest of the heavy
lifting. Which is why I was talking about Cameron Fleming.
I don't think he's necessarily at the level in terms of payment of those other guys that we're talking about.
Like we said last year when Whitworth was mega expensive and then there was supposed to be Riley Reiff in the reasonable category, he turned out to be a little more expensive than any of us anticipated.
You always have to monitor the market because things can change. So who you think may be on the second tier could creep up a little.
I know.
You never know.
I'd like to think that Fleming is in that reasonable category, which makes him a good buy.
Yes, I would certainly agree with you. I think that that's a more reasonable price that perhaps teams are thinking about. But all it takes is the first two guys to land contracts quickly, Paul, and then the other teams that need offensive linemen to start bidding against one another, and all Fleming's agent is going to be doing is picking up phone call after phone call.
I know.
And the price is skyrocketing.
That's going to be an issue. That's going
to
be an issue.
You have to take that as well into consideration. All right, let's head back to the phone lines. Lloyd is in Philly. Lloyd, what's happening?
Thank you for having me on, gentlemen. I'll try to be quick, but I had a few things. One, this is what I would do as general manager. Probably not going to happen, but since Sherman came over from the Vikings, I'm sure he has a good, pretty good assessment on all three quarterbacks. Teddy Bridgewater is relatively young. I heard you talking about him on that list, but prior to listening to you guys, there was never a time that I ever heard anybody say anything about the possibility of him coming over. If he shakes free as a free agent, we can sign him to a two-year deal, and he competes with Davis Webb and shows that his leg has healed enough that he can be competitive on the football field. Between the two of them, I think they're better than anybody that's coming out in the draft. I've heard so many things about Josh Rosen having a history of injury and Sam Darnold needing another year, yet they're going to go 1 and 2 possibly in the draft. To me, it's absolutely ridiculous, but it happens every year. The quarterbacks get pushed up. Even though they may be a late first-round talent, they're going to go in the early first round, just the way it is. In addition to that, listening to other callers talk about offensive line, I guess the reason why it's highlighted with the Giants is because we have one of the top three slowest or least mobile quarterbacks in the NFL. For all of the other things that he does well, it makes the rest of the offensive line look like they're not as good as they actually are. Eric Flowers is consistently getting killed, even though the second half of the season was pretty good. I'm satisfied with what we had last year in terms of how they ended the season on the offensive line, even though it was constantly somebody coming in new to replace somebody that was injured. But if we brought all of those same guys back and were able – well, I'm sure financially it's not feasible to do that because we have two guys that are going to be high-priced free agents. But if we had all of those guys back and built through the draft, I'd be completely satisfied with that. And well, I think the new scheme –
Well, Lloyd, I mean, two things that I want to bring up. Number one, keep in mind, when Geno Smith was under center, you had basically the same exact results that you had when Eli Manning was under center. So, I mean, while Eli's not nearly as mobile, I think we saw when even you put a mobile quarterback under center, the offensive line and the protection was limited still, where even a mobile quarterback had a hard time extending plays. I mean, if you remember, Geno was sacked two times. I think he lost a pair of fumbles in that game, if I'm correct.
He did.
Wait, I got to say this. That was Bobby Hart blocking Khalil Mack. Khalil Mack is going to the Hall of Fame.
Yeah,
anybody that tells me anything about Geno Smith being at fault for those protection issues.
But I'm not bringing that
actually,
up.
I got to get back to him. You're actually incorrect. They were actually Geno Smith's problem because at the line of scrimmage, he was supposed to change the protection and he screwed up. He didn't see it. Didn't call out the proper protection, and then things collapsed on him. So actually, that was Geno Smith's fault.
Oh, wait, I thought Khalil Mack was blocked off the right tackle. I didn't see him come free.
I have double checked what happened after that game, and Geno Smith did not call out the proper protection.
Okay,
and that's unfortunate, but that's part of the game. That again, this is why we try to tell people it's hard. When you're watching the TV copy or you're even watching in the stands, unless you're able to double check with guys afterwards, which is part of what we're supposed to do, you don't know. I'm not trying to scold you. I'm just trying to give you what happened. That's all.
Yeah, I appreciate you enlightening me on that one.
Do you want Pugh back?
I do.
You do?
I like Pugh back, but, you know, it just like you said in the previous phone call or just after it, it depends on how much he wants and which position he's going to play. I prefer him at tackle, but if we're going to have a guard, I'd rather get the guard out of the draft.
I think the bigger question is what is his medical? You know, I mean, he went out there for that second opinion to California.
Yeah.
What if the medical says he's a big risk? I don't know. I just don't know. As much as I like Justin Pugh, if the medical says we can't guarantee you he's going to give you 16 and we can't even guarantee you he's going to play beyond this year, what do you do then?
I'm sorry.
No, I said those are all things that you have to look into before you make a decision.
And we don't have the answers to those.
Yeah. No, but it'll be the same situation as what happened with Will Beatty, who was that guy from Maine's favorite offensive line.
You mean Charlie?
Now you're the second person to bring him up.
I'll never say his name.
Yeah. We thank you for that. I guarantee you will get a phone call from Charlie now because every time you say Will Beatty, his ears start ringing. But thank you, Lloyd. We appreciate that. Yes.
All right. Well, the situation is just going to be that we'll find out over time. Either he's going to get that big money contract from somebody who's willing to take the risk or mm-hmm. He gets waited out, and then it comes to a situation where the market dries up and he's not going to get that big money contract. And if his health is the issue, then we'll find out from that point.
Yeah, the question's going to be with as many teams that desperately need help along their offensive lines, and we just talked about the dearth of real high-caliber free agents available, there may be a team that says, you know what, we'll give them the big money anyway because we'll take the risk. Our medical guys are saying it could be dicey, but you know what? We're so desperate, we'll fork over to change. And maybe the Giants will or will not be one of those teams that's going to chase him up the economic ladder, but there may just as well be somebody else out there who'll say, the heck with the risk. We're paying him because we're desperate. I mean, it could happen.
Well, and Lloyd, listen, we appreciate the phone call. I want to get to a few other calls here.
Thanks
for weighing in.
All right.
Brought this up on a previous show, and if the Giants are interested in bringing back Justin Pugh, I'd consider giving him the transition tag. Mm-hmm. I would consider telling Justin, go out, assess the market. If you want to bring us back offer sheets, we'll look them over. And then this way, you're not locked to him. Mm-hmm. You're still allowing him to go talk, but you have the security to match them.
I think the only way you can even get to that dilemma or that puzzle is once you find out what the medical is.
Of course.
Because the medical...
You have to have the desire to want to bring him back in order to do that.
Right.
Yeah.
If the medical is okay, I could understand your method of attack on that.
Yeah, because I think the transition tag is not something that's used a lot, Paul, but I think it's a useful resource.
Mm-hmm.
You're telling a player, let them set the market. You're allowing him to go talk, but the good news is you're not dictating the market.
Right.
Let other teams start the bidding war. Worst case scenario, you let him walk. Best case scenario, you have an opportunity to match.
Sometimes the transition tag is actually enough to scare people away.
That's true. And then, therefore, then you ultimately set the market. But I think it's something reasonable to consider. The other thing real quickly that I wanted to mention, Lloyd started off talking about Teddy Bridgewater because of his connection to Pat Shurmur. Two things on that subject. Number one, if you're bringing up Josh Rosen's injury history, Teddy Bridgewater has an injury history too.
Of course.
So you can't say that Teddy Bridgewater is 10 times more attractive than risking the number two overall pick with somebody that also has an injury history. That, to me, doesn't add up. I also believe Teddy Bridgewater wants to be a starter, and I think he is going to pursue places that can give him a legitimate shot to start year one if it's not the Vikings. If you brought him over here, and listen, I may be mistaken, and maybe he changes his school of thought, but Eli's the starter. So you're basically going to bring him in. If you give him a two-year deal like the caller proposed,
right?
What are you trying to sell him on? Well, you know, if we move on from Eli after 1 year,
yeah,
we're going to give you an opportunity to start. I don't know if that's appealing to somebody like
that's
him.
That's probably not going to float his boat.
Yeah, so I think he's going to aggressively pursue a team that has a legitimate question at quarterback, and they may be very willing to give him an opportunity to come in day one and compete mm-hmm. for a starting job. All right, Dan is in Madrid. Dan, how's
wow.
it going?
How you guys doing?
Doing
love
right,
the show.
Dan.
Long-time listener.
Thank you. Are you really in Madrid?
I'm really in Madrid. I'm from New York, but I'm here teaching English for a year.
Very nice. Cool. Thanks for calling.
I picked a good year to go away, if I'm being honest.
Okay.
Okay, so this is mainly for Paul.
Okay.
Paul, I have a huge amount of respect for you, a huge amount of respect for what you do, and we usually see eye to eye.
Okay.
We usually even see eye to eye on this. I'm for trading down.
Okay.
Unless Gettleman and the staff believe, like 99% of the scouting community believes, that one of these four guys is a quarterback. Now, I know what you're going to say. You're going to say Davis Webb. Here's my opinion. You could be totally 100% correct that Davis Webb is an NFL starter. I just don't think it's responsible football to take the chance with a aging quarterback, to take the chance to find out that maybe he's not, when we have the opportunity to better our odds with the several pick.
And that's okay. It's a valid opinion. I don't dispute the logic or the validity of that opinion to those people who are in that camp. I'm in the other camp, though, and I feel like I have enough of reasons to go in my direction. That doesn't necessarily mean either one of us are right or wrong, though, because only time will tell.
I agree, and you're 100% right. I wanted to call because especially yesterday, you know, it wouldn't hurt to not be so dismissive of the idea with the, you know, with the little voices and stuff. Listen.
Oh, I have fun with it. It's entertaining. That's
all.
That's all. It's all absolutely. It's all in good fun.
It's all in good fun, but That's all. I would ask you this,
The Giants seem to have a plan to try to turn this around very quickly. That's everything that's been said by both Gettleman and Shurmur, and even John Mara, who said, I expect the Giants to be good in 2018. Well, to do that, would you not agree, though, that to do that, they got a few more than just one or two holes? They probably got three, four, or five holes that have to be fixed. And what better way to accomplish that mission than to accumulate more picks in a trade of the pick? I mean, because the truth is, you can't sign like six free agents. You don't have the money to do it.
And here's my counter to that, Paul.
Okay.
Here's my counter to that. And you tell me if you buy it.
It's fair. Go ahead. What do you got?
2016, this team went 11-5 on the back of the defense that's mainly still under contract. Mainly.
Right.
And the people that are not under contract are, I don't want to say they're not important, but they're not Snacks Harrison, and they're not Landon Collins, and they're not Janoris Jenkins.
They're not your franchise guys. Yeah. I get it.
Okay, exactly. So, I'm of the belief, like you guys were talking about a little bit ago, that this offensive line, while bad, is not as far from being serviceable/average. Is not far from being serviceable/average. So I think with between free agency and the six other picks that we have in the draft, because I feel like people think that if we take a quarterback at two, we just forfeit free agency and the draft, and that's all we're doing in the offseason. I think with the six other picks in the draft, with free agency and with trade options, whether that's trading players that we have for players on the other team, whether that's something with maybe a Cordy Glenn in Buffalo, I don't know. I think we can have our cake and eat it too. I truly, truly believe that.
Well, let me just say this to you. And again, I understand the opinion. I would say this. Not only though do the Giants have a handful of holes in key spots, whether it's the offensive line, wide receiver, or linebacker that you know they got to deal with, the other problem is, and we found this out too last year, it hit you in the face like a bucket of ice, is that they're lacking depth. I mean, we said after the 11-win season, they were very fortunate to be one of the healthier teams for that campaign, especially when it came to their starters and key players. They got away pretty much unscathed, and that's what helped them win 11 games.
But that was not the case the following year.
Now, last season, what happened? Not only were they insufficiently fortified in some areas, but they also did not have any depth, and the injury bug hit them real hard. So, to me, the compiling of the picks, if you can get them, especially good high premium picks, and with the combination of free agency, isn't just to fill the front line holes that they need to be a contender, but also maybe to get a couple of guys depth-wise
that
if the injury bug hits you again, you're not going to be crippled and everything goes to pot.
And you know what? That's actually a great point, Paul, and I kind of concede on that. Although I will say this, you could make the argument that it's less about us not having depth because of the numbers and more that the depth that we had by previous regimes were not up to snuff.
Yeah, but Dan, here's the thing. No matter how you want to classify the reason why the depth is not there.
It's not there.
It's not there, and you can't just replace it overnight. So that's the larger point that Paul was bringing up. You still have to find quality depth, no matter what the cause of not having it was.
And you're right. My where I was going with that is that maybe with the new regime, third, fourth round picks that weren't really performing in the past can do so now.
You know what would be awesome? If they signed two, three, four middle of the road, reasonable free agents, and then they had a draft like they had back in 2007, where every member of the rookie class immediately contributed that first year, gave them some production, and all of a sudden now, within one off season, you have like 10 guys who gave you production. Now, that's lightning in a bottle.
Yes.
But if that happens again, wow, the Giants are going to be cooking this year.
Well, that's a way to overcome multiple issues. And listen, Dan, appreciate the phone call. Thanks so much for weighing in.
Thank you.
We appreciate you tuning in from overseas. I think the realistic, though, option
realistically,
is the fact that it may be a gradual process to get to the point that you're talking about.
Yeah, it's going to be tough for that to happen, but it could happen.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, let's head back to the phone lines. Daniel is in Colorado. Daniel, what's happening?
Hey, gentlemen, how you doing?
Doing all right,
okay.
Daniel. What do you got for us?
Happy Valentine's Day to the New York Giants organization.
Okay.
Love you guys. Love you guys. You know what I'm saying?
Awesome.
Okay, guys, I want to talk about the draft and free agency and kind of how they're linked.
Yeah.
If we look at the draft order, 1 through 6, all six teams are looking for a quarterback to some degree. And I put Indy in there because we haven't seen Andrew Luck play.
Well, they got Jacoby Brissett, though,
who they could be looking for a quarterback. So if we look at it, we've got six free agents and four top prospects. You know, Kirk Cousins is not going to go to Cleveland. So that's not going to – he's just not going to go there.
Right.
You know, that's just not
going to happen. I wouldn't guarantee anything. Listen, money talks.
I wouldn't guarantee it, but he wants to go where he's going to be a
– He's not going to Cleveland. He's right. He's not going to Cleveland.
Personally, I don't think he should go to Cleveland. But what I'm saying is when we make these declarations on programs that there's no way he's going to Cleveland, I've seen a lot happen in the NFL where all of a sudden the boatload of cash comes out and he can't turn it down.
Right.
I agree with you. I don't think he should go to Cleveland. I don't think it's going to happen, but I wouldn't guarantee that it's not
going
to happen.
Let's go on that premise. Let's go on that premise.
I don't think he's going to play too much into how the draft is going to happen because, to be honest, I don't think he's going to go to Denver either. Possibly the Jets maybe, but most likely it sounds like the Vikings or something like that. So that kind of leaves maybe someone like Keenum and Bridgewater that might affect this draft just a little bit.
Okay, I would tell you this.
In the sense that the term double down comes in, Cleveland still might draft a quarterback, but still look for someone like Keenum. Same with Denver. They've got a couple of young guys. So these are things that could kind of change the complexity of the draft.
The NFL people,
you know that they're probably going to go somewhere in that top six.
I should say this, though. The NFL people that I've talked to tell me they think the Broncos are very strong for Kirk Cousins. So I would not be so quick to dismiss that part of your scenario because – there's a lot of tea leaves telling me Broncos are making a big pitch for him. And so that does kind of upset the apple cart in the top six.
Yeah, I don't think you could assume that just Teddy Bridgewater and Sam Bradford and Case Keenum are the only ones that are going to impact the draft. Kirk is going to impact the draft because there's a few teams that are picking high up there that could very well be aggressively pursuing him. Cleveland may not be the team, like you said, but I don't think you can start dismissing everybody else from that conversation, Daniel. And the other thing is Cleveland has two top four picks, so they may not take their quarterback number one, no matter what they do in free agency, and they may then wait to number four to perhaps go after their quarterback. They have some flexibility in terms of their decision-making as well.
I mean, the way people talk about Barkley, and again, superstar talent, what if they took Barkley number one and decided to take the quarterback at four?
That's a very reasonable
situation. I agree. In fact, that's actually what I think is going to happen, to be honest. I think that they're going to take Barkley one and take a quarterback at four. But I guess what I was driving at is this seems to be at the top six, kind of a quarterback-centric group of teams, or at least looking for quarterbacks. Giants may be not as desperate, let's say, as the Jets. But definitely they would like to get a quarterback, if they could, out of this group of, you know, young, talented quarterbacks. Certainly they would. You know,
I don't think so, but you certainly
take a quarterback.
Just
saying, of the top six teams, they all would like to get a quarterback.
You could make that assumption if you like. I don't necessarily agree with it, but I'm not going to fight you on that. But if there's more to the point, go right ahead and finish.
Oh, no, I just keep kind of looking at the teams and seeing it seems like we've got a lot of questions about how the free agency is going to play into which teams are going to take a quarterback in this draft class that's in this, you know, group.
And
I'll close on this and let you guys I'll take this off the air. I'm kind of curious about DeShone Kizer because how does he play into this? And is he somebody that that says, look, man, the guy is just not going to have it. And he's not going to be there because if somehow he's still got something coming, you know, that could play into how things go.
Yeah, but they could very well say they want to bring in somebody for competition. You can't look at it in a bubble and assume that just because a team has a question mark at a quarterback or has solidified at that position that they wouldn't make a move. Case in point, the Chiefs last year, and I keep bringing this up, the Chiefs moved up when they had Alex Smith, and they had him under contract for two more years, yet they still made a move to take Patrick Mahomes a year before they then handed him the starting reins. For all we know, a team that right now has no need for a quarterback decides to make a move because they're high on a guy, and they draft him. So that's what you can't operate under the rationale, oh, the top six teams all need quarterbacks, so I know exactly how it's going to play out. That's not how the NFL works.
I'll tell you this. Arizona at 15 – they've got to be believing that if they get a stud quarterback, whether it's a prospect or a veteran, they have to believe that they're a playoff team again. I mean, they were 500 this past season, and Carson Palmer was just a wash for them. So they have to think if they get somebody who's got a lot of shine and luster on them, they're back in business again. So at 15, they're probably thinking we're not going to get one of those four guys. Or at least certainly it's possible that they're thinking that. They may be willing to give you a boatload of picks to get up into the top five.
Well, or perhaps, and appreciate the phone call, Daniel.
Thank you.
Or perhaps, you know, they sign a guy like Kirk Cousins, but at the same time, you know, they also want to draft a young guy behind him or something like that. And maybe they'll settle on a Lamar Jackson or one of these other quarterbacks that could go into the mid-late portion of the first round.
Oh, they might even go that second or third round for a quarterback. If they sign a Cousins, they're not taking one of the first round.
All I'm saying is that teams, if there's anything we learned from this football season, Paul, it's you can never have enough. And Dave Gettleman emphasized this. And the reason I bring it up is the Philadelphia Eagles, I mean, how many times do we got to go through how many starters they lost this season?
Mm-hmm.
And they had the depth to be able to avoid getting hurt so badly that they couldn't overcome those issues. And
right.
Nick Foles turned out to be a very solid signing for them because of the fact that Carson Wentz tore his ACL. Ron is in Georgia. Ron, what's happening?
What's going on, guys?
Hello. All right, Ron, what do you got for us?
I've been sitting here listening. I've been going through a whole bunch of different stuff. I've seen the time, so I'm just going to have to – I got 2 points I'm going to throw out there, and I can take them off air. About to make Charlie proud.
I don't know if you're too fond of hearing that, but that's okay. Yes.
I feel like when we critique players sometimes, we critique them based on who preceded them. We were hard on Beatty because it came after Deal. But before the Peck and the year before the year that he signed that big contract, we got to the point where we were like, okay, I can do Will Beatty as my left tackle for the next couple of years. My question is, can Flowers be Will Beatty? That's the first question.
Different style of player. Flowers, although he has not reached his full potential, and no one's going to disagree with you, he still is more of a power offensive lineman. Beatty is more of a finesse technician style of offensive lineman. They are different types of guys.
Okay. Okay. Well, if that's the case, I'm cool with Flowers being the right tackle next to a guy like Fluker. Now,
yeah, and that's not a bad idea. I mean, when he was coming out of the draft, I originally said I think he'd be a terrific right tackle in the pros, but I also agree with the Giants thinking that he could project to the left side. But I don't think there's any doubt when you look at his body type and his skill set, Flowers has also the ability to play guard, I believe. Will Beatty is not built to play guard. I mean, these guys are definitely different physical makeups.
Yeah. My thing with Flowers playing guard at this point, still under rookie contract, based on where we drafted him, I think we do him a disservice to move him inside before we try him.
You know what?
At right tackle.
You put him where you need him to give yourself the best chance to win. As coaches always say, we're putting our best five out on the field.
Yeah, and remember, you know, keep in mind, Dave Gettleman did not draft Eric Flowers.
There's no allegiance
staff,
there.
Yeah, so, and I keep bringing this up. So, you know, Ron, when you talk about it's a disservice or they owe it to the player, this completely new regime doesn't owe anything to anybody because there's no ties to any of these players. So they're going to come in with a completely new mindset, and if they feel the guy is better suited as a right tackle or better suited as a guard, there's nothing that's going to prevent them from doing that.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, I completely understand that, and trust and believe me, I'm really on the replace Flowers. He don't need to be on the team. He should have been on the next flight after Bobby Hart left. But anyway, the last point I want to bring up is when it comes to the draft. Like I told y'all before, big Saquon Barkley fan, big Penn State fan.
That's fine.
I love Saquon Barkley, but if draft night comes and we ain't on the phone with the Buffalo Bills after you don't want Tyrod Taylor and the Nathan Peterman fiasco, can I have those two number ones the number two and the number one next year and come get your quarterback that you want for the future.
Oh, come on. Don't settle for that. Let's get some more out of them.
Well, they also have to be high on this quarterback class, too. Let's not forget. It takes two to tango.
That's not nearly enough. You're letting them off the hook easy, my friend.
I was just looking at one of the charts. I know you said there was another chart that you had. I forget who you said it was. But the chart I was looking at, just based on the price point for the number two pick and what the Bills had to offer and how it matched up.
I'm glad you called because
combination of picks.
We're nearly out of time, but I'm glad you called because I do want to touch on this. We'll talk more about it next week when I come back on the show. There are two charts now. There's the Jimmy Johnson trade value chart, which came into existence many years ago when he was with the Cowboys. In last year, there was another chart that was another value chart for the draft that was put out by a mathematical guy who strictly based the chart on the last 10 years of draft pick only trades. So it is a more realistic chart based on how the marketplace has changed and reacted to the Jimmy Johnson chart. Now, some teams use that one as opposed to the Jimmy Johnson one. The problem is the values that have been established are different on both charts. So that does cause some confusion amongst teams when they're starting to talk about what they want to do because one guy says, hey, we're giving you good value based on the chart, and the other team says, no, we have the other chart. Yeah. That's not good value.
Yeah. Try to find the middle area.
So it causes a lot of conversation, and I have both charts. So, you know, that's one thing you got to take into account. The other thing is, no matter which chart you're using, when you're moving up into the top five of the first round, there's an extra premium on top of whatever the value chart says anyway. So you look at your numbers, you match them up, and now you have to tack on extra.
Well, and you're also going to look at previous trades in which teams moved up into that area to see also what was sacrificed.
And you'll find that premium exists, like with the trade for RG3.
Yeah.
I got one last point to go with that, why I think it makes it appealing to the Buffalo Bills. You have New England with an aging Tom Brady. You have the Jets with enter name here quarterback, whoever they decide to find that week. And then you got the Miami Dolphins with Ryan Tannehill. A franchise quarterback can put you in a position to be very, very competitive.
Right, for a long time.
So, all right, thank you.
All right, Ron.
Thank you.
Once again, it depends on whether or not Buffalo thinks any of those guys are franchise quarterbacks. Just because number two is appealing doesn't mean the Bills think very highly of this quarterback class. And while I don't think they're a front runner, who's to say that maybe Buffalo doesn't go after Kirk Cousins, too?
Let's make it simple as we say goodbye. Put the for sale sign out, and let's field the phone calls.
Yeah, exactly. You don't necessarily need to just look at 21 and 22. You put it out there, and then you get feelers, and you see perhaps if you can get a good, attractive offer. With that being said, appreciate all the phone calls. We'll try to address some of your tweets off the air. We had a busy show on the phones. Big Blue Kickoff Live up and running again tomorrow at noon Eastern. We will hit on a variety of topics, as we always do. For Paul Dottino, I'm Lance Meadow. Enjoy the rest of your Wednesday right here on Giants.com. Have a good day.